This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, interesting report out of Kaiser Health News last week. In spite of the dire predictions to the contrary in the run-up to the healthcare law's addition of millions of Americans gaining insurance coverage, the primary care system in America has not been crushed under the weight of these new enrollees.
Well, Mark, you remember opponents of the Affordable Care Act have been predicting that new patient populations would inundate the healthcare system, causing delays and backlogs in the primary care space. But the Kaiser report that's out shows the system is doing a pretty good job of absorbing the new healthcare consumers. With the largest expansion of healthcare in 50 years, a quick survey of health systems around the country show that, for the most part, systems have been able to handle the influx of the some 13 million newly insured individuals, either through the private insurances or the Medicaid expansion. So a prediction that did not come to pass.
It should be noted, Margaret, there are some parts of the country where there have been higher utilization from those new patients. Washington State, California, and Kentucky, all who had successful enrollment efforts. There have been some delays in getting Medicaid's cards out to people, but there's a sense that folks are feeling empowered to utilize the healthcare system and are learning to navigate it as well.
Well, I think everybody would agree that the country is still in a bit of a learning curve, but you know, I think compared to years gone by, our healthcare system maybe is a little more adaptable and a population that has much better access to getting information about what to do and how to use it. And all that bodes well, I think.
Our guest today is someone who has had his eye on transformation of the healthcare system moving forward. Dr. Harry Greenspun is a senior advisor to the Deloitte Center for Healthcare Transformation and Technology at the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions. He's also working at the intersection of health information and healthcare delivery and has examined how healthcare systems are being transformed.
Lori Robertson will be checking in from factcheck.org. She is always on the hunt for misstatements about health policy spoken in the public domain.
But no matter what the topic, you can hear all of our shows by Googling CHC Radio. And as always, if you have comments, please email us at chcradio.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'd love hearing from you.
We'll get to our interview with Dr. Harry Greenspun in just a moment.
But first, here's our producer, Mary Ann O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines. The VA coming under more scrutiny in the wake of several dozen deaths due to delayed treatment at a VA hospital in Phoenix, Arizona. While the director of that VA hospital has been replaced, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs Administration has come under a barrage of criticism. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel has said he supports Secretary Eric Shinseki, but adds the care veterans are receiving is simply not good enough. Recently, reports surfaced that as many as 40 veterans may have died while waiting for medical care from the VA hospital in Phoenix. Veterans have also waited years in some cases to collect benefits from the administration. The American Legion and some in Congress have called for Shinseki's ouster. Hagel admitted many of these issues were longstanding and have plagued the department since long before Shinseki took the helm. The matter continues to be investigated. And while we grapple with the concept of access to care for all in this country, one third world country is seeing dramatic results in 1 year from a concerted health policy shift. Thailand has seen a 13% drop in 1 year with its 30 baht program, which essentially makes about $35 per capita available for folks to access health care in that country, especially in more impoverished provinces. A Harvard MIT study showed the biggest increase in patient usage was young women of childbearing age and infants and children. The survey revealed then the sharp decrease in infant death was a result of parents feeling they had a right to hospital intervention, and most of the diseases were highly treatable, pneumonia, infection, and the like. I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines.
We're speaking today with Dr. Harry Greenspun, a senior advisor of healthcare transformation and technology at the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions, which is addressing key health information technology and clinical transformation. Prior to that, Dr. Greenspun was chief medical officer for Dell, Inc. He writes extensively on healthcare, is co-author of Reengineering Healthcare, a manifesto for radically rethinking healthcare delivery. He serves on the World Economic Forum Global Agenda Council on Digital Health and was named one of the 50 most influential physician executives in healthcare by Modern Healthcare. Dr. Greenspun, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Oh, great to be here.
We're in this incredible transformational shift in the healthcare system. And while we had a few bumps on the road of rolling out the Affordable Care Act, things seem to be moving forward. The number of enrollees finally exceeded the administration's initial hopes. But your book, 2012, co-written by Jim Champy, Reengineering Healthcare, suggests that something else needs to be done to really radically transform healthcare for the better. Can you talk to us about this radical redesign and how there's any interplay between the efforts of the Affordable Care Act and the direction you see the country moving?
Well, sure. I mean, when you think about a lot of what healthcare has done to improve itself has been to make sort of like small incremental changes. You know, how can you get a physician to see, you know, a couple more patients per hour? How do you move people more efficiently through a hospital? And if you really want to transform a system, you have to really do things differently. You have to have different models of care. You have to have different types of people providing those kinds of care. And you also have to change the focus on what you're caring for. Are you focusing on doing sick care or acute care treatment, or are you going to focus more on prevention and wellness? Now, what's interesting when we look at the Affordable Care Act, we're moving from a reimbursement model of paying physicians and hospitals for the volume of work they do to the value of work that they do, so the outcomes they achieve. And that creates a lot of different types of behavior and lots of new opportunities to provide innovation, where if physicians and hospitals are responsible for not just doing a good job when you're in front of them, but also making sure you stay healthy and help make good choices. And when care gets transferred from person to person or facility to facility, that gets done effectively.
Well, for this show, we spend a lot of time speaking with innovators in the healthcare space who have really attempted to do what you're describing, reinventing the wheel by rebuilding systems from the ground up, and always with those three pillars that you talk about in your work: technology, process, and people. What does that reengineering process look like, and who in the country do you think has really gotten it right so far?
You know, you see a lot of people coming in from other industries trying to fix healthcare, and you have a lot of technology companies specifically trying to do this. But the problem they've solved is the technology problem, which is usually not the hard problem to solve. Mm-hmm. They may come up with a better way of presenting information or, you know, some cool app for your phone, but they really haven't done much. And you think there have been a lot of technologies all around for quite some time, telehealth being an example of that, where it really wasn't for a lack of good technology that didn't catch on. It was a reimbursement problem, that there were disincentives for physicians to use that. So, unless these technological improvements can, address some of these other issues, it's not going to help much. You see lots of places around the country where you see some really interesting innovation, and it occurs in sort of smaller pockets. You know, we're seeing, emergency rooms create, small urgent care centers on the side. We're seeing a lot of work with that integrated delivery systems like Kaiser and AtlanticCare and others, where they're able to provide different types of outreach and different types of communication with their patients and to give them information when they need it.
You know, technology is important not only on the clinical side, but it proved to be one of the difficulties in the rollout of trying to get technology related to enrollment to work successfully. Now, we're from Connecticut, and we had Kevin Counihan, who was the CEO of the Connecticut Exchange, on, which had really a remarkable success story to tell. They also had an intersection with Deloitte, was part of that success. But talk to us a little bit about that technology platform around enrollment, because we're going to see a big shift over the next half a dozen years where the employer-based insurance policy might change really to these large exchanges. Are they equipped to manage them? What do you see out that's good news around technology platforms?
Well, you know, I think the lesson we've learned is that large IT projects are hard. And, in this first round, what we saw in many exchanges was just, you know, sort of helping people to sign up. And the key issue that we're going to be looking forward to in the future is helping people actually make better decisions of what kind of coverage they need. Because very often, the choices people make and how they get covered don't necessarily align with their particular needs. So, it's really about getting appropriate coverage for the right conditions that you have, and that's complicated. You know, again, we think of individuals as consumers, and consumers only need stuff when they need stuff, mm-hmm. right? So, and same thing with consumers in healthcare is that you often don't think about catastrophic coverage or different medication coverage until those needs actually arise for you.
Well, Dr. Greenspan, the Deloitte 2013 survey of healthcare consumers showed a really kind of a decided lack of trust in the healthcare system and its value to the healthcare consumer, with over half of those questioned, and this really surprised me, rating the healthcare system with a D or an F, and half reporting that they pay more out-of-pocket costs for their healthcare than in previous years. What are your thoughts on how do we educate people, how to engage people and get them to plan in advance? What are you seeing around the country? What are the strategies? Is it a social media campaign, a education campaign? We'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
You know, number one is that, you know, as you mentioned, most consumers give our healthcare system a pretty low rating. But what's also interesting about that is, and that extends to how they view quality. When you ask individuals about the quality of care that they get, the response back you usually get are things related to were the people nice? Did they listen to you? Could you get an appointment when you wanted to? And, you know, all of us know people who have stayed with a doctor despite a bad outcome, and it's not until they have a problem with the office staff or, you know, the doctor upsets them or something like that that they actually consider shifting. We have to help them understand how to interpret quality and outcome information. And I think what we're going to see as we, you know, push more of the cost of care onto consumers, they're going to have to start thinking more about the value, you know, who's got the outcomes that they're looking for, but also the service experience they're looking for and safety considerations and other things that are important to them. So, you know, if I need a knee arthroscopy and I find out it's going to cost me, you know, X amount of dollars to go to a particular physician and have that done, that I don't simply skip care, that I'm able to understand how can I find a physician who, you know, fits the budget I can afford with outcomes that are high and the type of service that I want to get.
We're speaking today with Dr. Harry Greenspun, Senior Advisor at the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions. Harry, let's look at that proliferation of HIT technology. And in your book, you talk about what's really needed is this big secure system in the cloud where all health records can be safely accessed. But you say that really remains a distant dream. So what's needed to help achieve that kind of seamless flow of information?
Consumers are very concerned about how their information gets shared, where it gets shared. You know, unlike other areas of your life, like financial services, most healthcare consumers, and it's, you know, greater than 50%, are concerned about losing sort of individual pieces of their medical information. And if you think about your own medical history, there's stuff in there that you just don't want other people to know about, and you want some pretty tight controls over that. One of the other things, though, you know, talk about the seamless aspect, is that one of the big problems we have is, you know, starting with, you know, sort of traditional health information technology and electronic health records, we have a real problem with interoperability. And that's only getting more complicated, and we're addressing it to a degree, but you think about the number of things out there, whether it's, you know, infusion pumps in a hospital or the Fitbit or Fuel band that you wear. We have all these new devices out there, you know, that are in us or around us that are putting out data, and we have to find ways of making the data interoperable so we can do stuff, because, you know, frankly, the health IT industry has not done a great job of pushing interoperability and making that happen.
Well, Dr. Greenspan, when CMS released the data from close to 900,000 physician encounters, and now sort of in the word of Todd Parks, the data's been liberated and lots of researchers and data analysts are mining it. We think we'll start to see some insights into cost and outcomes. What are we going to do with all that information to really drive changes in our understanding of outcomes and price?
This first data dump is a fascinating one because it contains a tremendous amount of data in it. And now we're starting to get some explanations around, well, you know, in some places, a single provider code was used for multiple providers, or drugs or devices are rolled up into these. So it's getting complicated. So, you know, using any, you know, single database is very, very challenging to get meaningful information about. But it's an important first step for us to understand what's going on in cost and quality, because as you see in study after study, what people charge and the outcomes they achieve are often unrelated. And so we want to be able to help people make better decisions. And when I say people, I mean, that's not only patients, that's employers and that's payers and it's the government, to understand, are they actually achieving the sorts of outcomes they're supposed to achieve for the price that people are paying for it? So, you know, it's important that we get this data out. I mean, again, I referenced the cardiac surgery and cardiology outcomes database in New York. You know, again, the question is, you know, can you marry up the outcomes information that's available with some of the cost information that's coming out, to help folks make better decisions. Unfortunately, isolated pockets of data are not going to get us all the way there, but they're certainly an important first step. You also mentioned the Pioneer ACOs. I think we've seen some interesting things that, the early experience with the ACO has been kind of mixed. And I think it shows that, in some sense, places that were early adopters of the ACO model, many of them actually were well prepared to be adopters of the ACO model. They either integrated delivery systems or they had already invested heavily in IT, and so they were capable of doing that. So they may have not have achieved the sort of remarkable new results that we expect them to achieve. And the other thing we see is, change is hard, as I mentioned before, and it's going to be a while before we figure out what's the right model, what's the best way to make these things work and be effective.
Let's talk a little bit about the youth population. It seems that there's a digital divide, if you will, by age in this younger generation. The millennials and some of the Gen Ys have certainly been raised in this digital age. And you call them digital omnivores and owners of many different types of devices. And I was sort of thinking back to your comment about trust. This is a group of consumers who post what we would say are HIPAA violations on their Facebook all of the time, very comfortable about sharing information. How are they going to drive sort of the redesign of how the healthcare industry thinks about sharing information and using technology?
Well, I think it would be a very interesting time in the sense that when you, years ago we talked about one of the barriers of health IT adoption was, getting physicians to, sort of curmudgeonly doctors, right, to adopt these computer things. And you contrast that with, most younger physicians and those coming out of school, they grew up with these devices, as you mentioned, and sort of working without them is really unthinkable. And you're seeing in a lot of practices where, providers really can't recruit new physicians unless they have, pretty extensive electronic health records and other types of systems. On the consumer side, it's not as though people's needs have changed, but their expectations have changed pretty dramatically. And you think about banking several years ago, where the app that people would use from a bank on your phone would maybe help you find an ATM. Now people can deposit checks with their phones. They can do all their banking on their phone. And so when they look at healthcare, they compare the kind of service they get in healthcare compared to, how they make restaurant reservations or, how they travel. They see a big gap. And as I mentioned earlier, when consumers view the service experience as quality, they're going to start looking at this gap in service as a gap in quality. And I think that's what's going to drive a lot of demand. And it's not only going to be for their own health care. It's going to be as, children take care of their elderly parents or as they're taking care of their kids, it's going to become more important for them to have these sorts of tools. And it's going to drive a lot of it. I think the other thing you talked about, the social media aspect of it, I just put out a paper called The Four Dimensions of mHealth. And one of the key things we talked about is as much as healthcare can, lend itself to social media and vice versa, you see great work being done in cancer and diabetes and other areas of really engaging people with each other. There are a lot of other conditions don't really lend themselves to that, either because they're not fun or More importantly, there's some real privacy concerns where people are concerned about having the information shared. And I think we'll start to see this as people start using these wearable devices, which they've been, you know, competing against each other in the fitness and wellness kind of area. As it starts moving into healthcare, that people may be more and more reluctant suddenly to share some of this information as it pushes in toward the healthcare realm.
We've been speaking today with Dr. Harry Greenspun, Senior Advisor for Healthcare Transformation and Technology at the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions. You can learn more about his work by going to deloitte.com/us/Harry Greenspun or follow him on Twitter by going to @HarryGreenspun. Dr. Greenspun, thank you so much for joining us on Conversations on Healthcare today.
Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
Well, during this 2014 election cycle, we've seen several ads that make the claim that the Affordable Care Act is hurting families. It's a very general claim, and it's misleading. Some who bought their own insurance on the individual market could end up paying more. It would depend on what kind of coverage they had before, health conditions, and whether they qualify for subsidies. But millions of uninsured families will gain coverage under the law, many of them through free or low-cost Medicaid or Children's Health Insurance Program coverage. And millions of insured families will get those federal subsidies to help pay for coverage. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office projects there will be 25 million fewer uninsured due to the law as soon as 2016, and 12 million are expected to gain free or low-cost Medicaid or Children's Health Insurance Program insurance. We've seen the hurting families claim in ads in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Nebraska, which are among the 19 states that have decided not to expand Medicaid. But even in those states, the nonpartisan Kaiser Family Foundation estimates that 135,000 residents total would newly join Medicaid because of the law. These are folks who would have been eligible previously, but are expected to sign up now, prompted by news about the Affordable Care Act or the individual mandate. Statements about struggling or hurting families attempt to paint the law in black and white when reality isn't so clear-cut. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Asthma is one of the leading causes of trips to the emergency room for children, and there are often a correlation between high-density, low-income neighborhoods and more trips to the hospital for treatment and intervention. When officials at Boston Children's Hospital noticed a spike in asthma outbreaks in certain neighborhood clusters, they decided to do something about it. They launched the Community Asthma Initiative. Triggers for asthma are well known. Dust, mold, pest, mice, and even overuse of certain cleaning products can cause trouble. They realized that if you could treat the environments in the patient's home, that might reduce the need to treat the patient in the emergency room.
The home visiting efforts work with children and families that have been identified through their hospitalizations and emergency room visits as an identification of having poorly controlled asthma, and also it's a teachable moment when families are open to making changes in terms of care and environment within the home.
Dr. Elizabeth Wood heads the program and says the first step is to identify the frequent flyers, those kids who make repeated trips to the emergency room. Then they match with the community health worker who visits their home several times and assesses the home for asthma triggers.
And they work on three areas: understanding asthma itself, understanding the medications and the need for control medications, and then working on the environmental issues within the home.
Families are given everything from HEPA filter vacuum cleaners to air purifiers. They are told not to clean with certain toxic products, and the homes are monitored for the presence of pests or rodents. The result, says Dr. Wood, has been pretty dramatic.
What's remarkable is that there was a 56% reduction in patients with any emergency department visits and 80% reduction in patients with any hospitalization.
And while this program is expensive, about $2,400 per family, there is a return on investment in reduced hospital costs and healthier children. The program has been so successful, it's being deployed in other hospital communities around the country. The Community Asthma Initiative, a simple reshifting of resources aimed at removing the cause of disease outbreaks in the community, leading to healthier patient populations. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.